Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
And you normally say no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Welcome back to another weekend roundup brought to you by Sports Shoes, as always. Crazy weekend again. We've been saying that every single week, but more world records. Shout out.
Oh my God. I think I've seen it. What is it? Seven records in 9 days. And, you know, I think there was like six distance records in a week. And obviously multiple people had broken the world record as well, if you count people like Kessler finishing second, and obviously you know, people like Hulk finishing second as well. So it has been a crazy week, mate, and perhaps we'll start with the craziest, I think, record. I mean, the fact that Grant Fisher's 12:44 on, was it Friday or Saturday night, has been completely overlooked by what Jacob Kipling had produced.
Yeah, 100%. Like 56:42 is
sickening,
is out of this world. And obviously, like, all world records are, that's why they're world records. But I did see a little poll on Twitter about whether, like, what was the most impressive one. Talking about Elba Rouge, 3:26. Yeah, the 56:42. They're talking about a 2-hour marathon. But yeah, most people voting for this half marathon at 56:42 from Kipling.
Without a doubt. And look, if those World Athletics points, by the way, have anything to go by, I think Kiplimo's half is more points than, what's her name, Chepkurui, who broke the world record in the marathon as well. So, you know, when she ran her 2:09, which is just ridiculous. So it puts even that performance, even that 2:09, which we thought was just freakishly fast, it puts that into perspective as well.
It certainly does. And I think, look, we've been saying for a while, Kiplimo is no joke, and he's been kicking around at the top of the sport for a number of years now. And I think his move to the roads is only going to keep getting better and better. What I'd love to see, and we always make these, I guess, judgments, is how well he can translate into a marathon, because we've always known he's a good half marathon runner. Chep's got the same, and as we've seen with him, it's difficult to translate into the marathon. So will Kipnimo be a future kind of marathon world beater, or will this just continue to be part of preparation for track races and continue to run sort of that 10-kilometer track and that half marathon distance?
Well, the thing is, like, I think this makes London very, very interesting, the London Marathon, because are we going to see something like we saw last year, just blokes go into a tunnel and never appear, like, completely, you know, blowing up? Because I think now there is a genuine assault on sub 2 hours in London. Like, there's no reason why that is not a legitimate goal for Kiplimo. And then it's like, well, who the hell's going to go with that? Who the hell's going to pace that? You know, can you even find, they probably can find people who can run a 60-minute half, or, you know, a 60:15 half front running. You know, I'm sure they can, but they're going to have to shop around, because those kind of runners aren't easy to come by either. So, and then what is that?
Recent.
Well, exactly. Yeah, they're all racing, or racing in that time of year, because it is, you know, marathon season. And then you think, yeah, you know, those in behind, you know, some incredible athletes in, you know, behind, what's that second pack going to look like? Is everyone just going to commit? Because we see it time and time again, everyone just commits to that, whatever that front group is. And so are we going to have four? I mean, bloody Emil and people like that are going to be in about the fifth pack, aren't they, at this rate?
They'll be in the fifth pack and then come third.
Well, very, very true. You know, very good point. But, you know, it's scary. It's frightening. Yeah, how fast he's moving. I mean, 56:42, 48-second improvement of 57:30, which, by the way, was a ridiculous record. I guess the only thing that you could maybe say, okay, well, you know, maybe Kiplimo has shown this sort of promise, was, what was he, 21 years old when he ran 57:31 in Lisbon 3 years ago, or even 4 years ago. He might have even been 20 at the time. So, you know, he's still only 24 years old, to put it into perspective as well. But I think the fact that he had run 57:31, you're like, well, you know, is a natural progression. You know, sort of 45 seconds off your half marathon over 4 years, when you go from, you know, being a 21-year-old to perhaps getting into your prime era of distance running between the age of 24 and 30, let's say. So, you know, I guess you could say like what he'd done before, like we could expect it. But I think there were some really eye-opening things for me. I mean, obviously the fact that he virtually had no pacemakers. He had absolutely no support. And, you know, a few people have said, you know, he was running closer to the lead car, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, come on. Like, he's doing it all on his own. And that lead car was not, that wasn't like a pace lead car like we saw in Breaking 2. It was very much just a lead car, you know, driving along with the clock on front of it. It was just relentless. You know, he put two identical 10Ks back to back, 26:46, which, by the way, he got 8th in the Olympic Games in Paris over 10,000 around 26:46.
It's absolutely ridiculous, isn't it? And I think, I don't know if it's been confirmed now, they were saying it was even quicker.
There were a few quite serious discrepancies, I think, with the splits. And like they were saying, his Finn K was what, 39,
26, 33, they were saying, from 5 to 15, which...
Yeah, that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, there was somewhere in there saying he might have dropped a 1303, 5K or something. But again, that wasn't the case. It was much more like a pretty steady 1320. 5K. So actually, I think from the official splits that have later sort of come out, it does suggest that it was quite even running. There was nothing. I mean, all his splits were ludicrous, but there wasn't like a ridiculous sort of 13 low 5K split in there. We have seen that sort of thing from him before. You know, and maybe as well, you know, he did on New Year's Eve. I do remember, you know, that 26:32, he ran for 10K when he was pissing around with Aragawi and they were both sort of laughing and joking. You know, maybe that did sort of give us an indication. Well, here we go then. That course is slightly downhill though, to be fair. That one, again, I think that was in Barcelona on New Year's Eve. So, but that's probably giving us a good indication of where he was at. But it is hard to put that performance into context. And it's, for me, though, if he doesn't win London, and as crazy as it sounds, or if he doesn't, we don't see him potentially run 2 hours, I mean, could be a bit of a disappointment because you now just have so much expectation for the guy.
Yeah, but I think we've seen time and time again that a quick half marathon doesn't equate to a quick marathon. Like the
thing is, there's quick half marathons and there's 56:42.
There is, but it's still relative, right? Because it depends how he's been training for it. If he's training for a marathon, and this is what he's been able to produce off marathon training. As I'm by that, obviously, I mean, yeah, he's doing a marathon, but I mean specifically doing marathon training. He's managed to produce 56:42 off of that. That's a different story to him doing a usual 10K half marathon type work, and then he then goes and tries to just tag a marathon on. That's a different story. That's when you see people then run. So in this case, maybe like a 2:4, 2:5, right? And if you then just try and tag it on, but if he's done it properly, which we presume he has, then like you say, you expect him to be around that two hour mark, at least 2:01.
I would agree, and he might play it safe, you know, for his debut. He might play it safe and just decide to go with,
you know,
yeah, just win
in the race,
yeah, and go with that
or prime in the race,
yeah, and run with that pack because. You know, we're way off doing a London preview, but you know, someone like Sebastian Sawi as well, who's just, you know, 2:02 for his debut, and just, you know, he seems quite steady in the sense that, you know, the way he won Copenhagen as well in September, and then obviously Valencia in December, he's almost like a mature racer. Whereas sometimes Kip Lima, you're just like, what are we gonna get from this guy? So yeah, I mean, that was that performance, and well, across the road. I'm not sure how far away Castellón 10K is from Barcelona, but Kajelcha goes and runs, I think, 26:30 and misses the world record by a touch. So he gets his world record snatched and misses his assault on a 10K world record, which apparently the conditions weren't amazing. It did look a little foggy. I did try and watch a little bit of it back as well. But yeah, he moved to, you know, number two all time. I think he was actually 26:31 officially. But imagine, you know, we're talking about all these world records. I mean, Kajelcha was literally just seconds off. We could have seen, you know, the 10K road world record and the half marathon world record go on the same day, literally minutes apart, because I think they did finish about 10 minutes apart as well.
Yeah, and Kajelcha, obviously, like you say, he's lost his couple previous records this week as well. Obviously, he had that indoor mile one
Poor bloke.
As well. So he probably went into these races thinking, right, I need to like you say, snatch something else back. But it is a crazy time, isn't it? And I did see an interesting Twitter thread from Steve Magnus, I think it was, just chatting through what he thinks he's been in terms of training adaptations and things, and really talking through things of just combined threshold training with intensity training, and they're covering more and more ground in one individual session rather than just going and doing 8x1 mile or doing 10x400. Like all these athletes are touching multiple different intensity zones in all of their workouts, and that trend we've seen over the past couple of years is what he's putting some of his performances down to.
Yeah, I would back that up from kind of what you see on the circuit as well. I mean, even that Grant Fisher workout that we saw a little while ago, you know, he's finishing a session at 4-minute mile speed, which, you know, again, is his sort of 3K, I guess, well, even a little bit slower than his 3K. And yeah, I guess a prime example of that as well is someone like Cole Hocker. We know, and Cooper Tier, like, we know those guys touch on various different speeds within one session, whether that be tempo, speed, and even they've got, you know, quite a creative way of doing things. Even watch, you know, you can watch on YouTube what they call a long run, and, you know, they're hitting multiple different speeds within their long run as well. So it is fascinating. So yeah, Magnus probably has a point there. And I think as well, to on top of that, Lum, is just the shoes, because I think the shoes obviously are faster. Well, yeah, no, not to be Hutchins here, but no, I just mean it's probably allowing people to do so much more in a session as well. Like, because you can just recover. And so, you know, week in, week out, we're just seeing a compound, just training, just stack and stack and stack and stack. And now we are sort of 4 years on then. And I think, yeah, people have got 2 or 3 years behind them. Super high volume, lots more intensity. And therefore, you know, everyone's just so much faster.
I think that's you're bang on there, mate. And this is what people like, they'll say things now like, oh yeah, but we've had the shoes for ages now. Like Farah had them at the World Half back when he was in Cardiff, right?
He was just putting them on.
That's what I mean. People are forgetting about this cumulative effect, like you just mentioned. And it's exactly the same with taking drugs, right? In that, yep, it's not about taking it to perform in one race. It's a cumulative training effect of being on drugs, or performance enhancing drugs, I should say, should clarify, and wearing the shoes, having wave lights, having better understanding of training over a period of time. We're going to continue to see the repercussions of this. So look, it's absolutely fine. We just need to kind of take the records of pinch of salt. It's great to see so many fast performances, but yeah, no doubt it's been a huge influence.
Yeah, there really has. Just on drugs, I mean, Yannick Sinner, Wilder have negotiated a 2-month ban for him versus a 2-year ban. He reckons he was getting massaged and, you know, there was some contamination there. And Wilder are very, very confident that it was not done, you know, there was no doping done intentionally, so shortened his ban. That is just baffling. I mean, imagine if that happened in the world of track and field. So I'm glad we haven't got a case like that happening. But it kind of does show you, yeah, potentially you have enough money and good enough lawyers and you can negotiate these sorts of things. And again, yeah, he's clearly treading a fine line, because we just know for a fact that use some bog standard deep heat or whatever you massage people with, that's just not happening, mate. So, you know, what sort of lotions and potions were you putting on your legs or wherever you get a massage?
Well, that's exactly what Salazar got done for, wasn't it? It was testing the limits, yeah, of testosterone gel.
Exactly.
Not on an athlete, on his son. So,
Jesus Christ, yeah.
Yeah.
But mate, back to Barcelona, because there were some pretty top British results. Mark Scott is back with a bang. Is he 60-15? I need to double check that result. But 60-56, sorry. So he just dipped inside 61 minutes. But again, a good showing for him. Still, what are we? Are we 10 weeks? 10, 11 weeks? 10, 11 weeks for the London Marathon.
Yeah, so they've probably really, really started to head into those marathon blocks now. And there's a lot that can be done in those 10.
There is, you know, and he's come off a camp in Flagstaff. So, you know, I hope he's getting back up there, or getting back to some form of altitude ahead of London, because it seems to just be crucial, especially in these endurance races. So yeah, that was good running from Scott, and then a couple of other Brits. Phil Sessman with a PB 61:28, and Zach Mohammed 61:43. Half again, that is quite a big step forward for someone like Sessman as well. So that starts to bode really well for his marathon season.
Yeah, it does. And again, I think when you talk about those sorts of times for the half, where we're going to expect to see people like Sessman chopping big times off their marathon, and they need to if they want to compete. Like the standards, now. It's not long ago that to be a sub 210 Brit was like, amazing. Mm-hmm. Those times are long gone.
Well, I think Sesman will be targeting 2.6. Yeah, I think Mark Scott in a similar ballpark. If they can run that now, you know, again, just let these guys continue to just build and stack on, you know, more training. I think Mark's having the most consistent block he's had for a long time, you know, so for him, that would be a very steady performance that he can go away and build off. And he kind of knows, okay, by the time LA rolls around, or even, you know, over the next 2 years, he can have a genuine assault going toe-to-toe with the mill, being Britain's best marathon. I think it's probably a stretch for him this London. If it mills,
he should have those aspirations, right?
He should, yeah.
We've been calling to our best K runners to step up a bit earlier to ensure that we have real talent in the marathon, and we've seen that in Emil, and we've seen it in Mark as well. Like, he could have spent a few more years on the track, running the time he was. So yeah, it's just taken maybe a couple more years. We don't know yet, but it's potentially taking a couple more years than we originally thought it would. But I think you're bang on, mate. I think he'll have a good showing this year, and then once he's got a real kind of solid time under the belt, he can go to something later this year or next.
Yes, he can. In a women's race, Chip Koskoi won it 64-12. So she was just, again, over two minutes and 10 seconds ahead of the next, Chepkirui. In second, Jess Judd, 69.37. Abby Donnelly, 69.42. Strong from them. Lily Partridge, 70 minutes, 29. So all of those three in the top 10. And again, you know, strong performances from them, really. I think it's Seville next weekend as well. Seville Marathon, and we know that's fast. So looking forward to, again, seeing some probably crazy, crazy results come out of that one. Perhaps not quite as deep as last year, given it was literally one of the final opportunities to get that Olympic time booked. But yeah, so, I mean, that was the road. It was ridiculous. I mean, Grant Fisher, just around that record in Boston, for me, I just have to comment on, you know, one, he's a beast, just completely. I mean, fair play to Henry McCluckey, by the way. Paced him to get him to 2K or two. He might have got him to 2.4K maybe, 2K somewhere else. So yeah, McCluckey, good work, mate. You're a part of history there. I think Grant Fisher thanked him as well publicly, so.
Quarrel too.
Yeah, absolutely. But he was just an animal, and anyone who hasn't seen that race, go and watch it, because I think as well, look, we'll compare that race to, I think, you know, a race which was dubbed to be quite innovative, the Keeley Classic, on the day after. I mean, just watching Grant Fisher, I mean, that energy was just coming through on the screen. You had 200-300 people on the infield. Well, that's just me plucking a number out of the air, but a lot of people on the infield, you crowd all the way around the outside. The noise was, it's coming across as loud on the screen, but I bet it was absolutely deafening in there. I really do. Like, obviously everyone there is either running or, you know, loves the sport. So they knew exactly what they were watching. And that is kind of, I think, how world records should be run. Obviously you get major champs in the summer, and it's like, yeah, that's when you really want to see a world record. But outside of that, thought it was very cool.
I did think, like you say, the have such a knowledgeable fan base over in the US at some of these. They're smaller meets, really, right? Like, in the grand scheme of things, they're smaller meets.
Well, it probably cost half as much to put on, even less, you know, cost next to nothing to put on. It's like kind of Watford Open vibes, but just on a much, much bigger scale with much, much faster athletes.
Absolutely. And I think that when you are chasing times, you need a knowledgeable fan base in the stadium, by the side of the track, in order to get excited about it. Because if you don't have a knowledge of, like, the history of the event, or like a really good understanding of split times, without seeing like a dog eat dog race, it's not exciting.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly.
You have to have an understanding of history of the athletes. Like, you need to know their stories, and you need to really realize what they're doing.
I remember, mate,
when me and you went to that Paris Diamond League and we saw Jaeger fall over the last hurdle at 8 minutes. But the crowd wasn't amazing, because no one really realized what was going on. They didn't realize how quick they're actually going.
Yeah.
That was decent. Like, it was decent atmosphere, but you stuck that race on US soil, right, with a load of Jaeger fans, and like an Oxy high performance, or cat, one of those Cali meets early season, then I'm telling you, there'd be a lot more pumps than that crowd in Paris.
Yeah, you have to appreciate what you're watching. And obviously for some people, 31 second or 30 second 200, it's just a number. But, you know, for people in the game, it's like anyone knows how hard that is, even just sort of a one-off 200. So, yeah, it was mightily impressive. And, you know, unfortunately for Grant, expected after his 3000, it was expected, to be honest. Like the two match up. I think what is extremely impressive and another indication of kind of the power of the shoes as well is he's done a 1500, a 3K and a 5K back to back, 3 weekends on the bounce. And he even spoke in his interview after, he was like, yeah, for 2 or 3 days after the 3K, he was trashed. And then he just started to kind of get better and better. By the time he came around to racing that Friday night, his legs were finally, you know, back to normal and back to being where he'd want them to be. But yeah, I wonder if, I mean, people have done it before, you know, back in the day, they have done it before. So, you know, I wonder if we're just kind of, that's just an easy excuse and an easy justification to mention the shoes, but
it helps, right, doesn't it? But
yeah,
I think, yeah, they're here to stay. So it's not really doesn't need to be over oath, but yeah, they for sure help, and they allow athletes to do that. We get to see athletes more. So it's only a good thing. I mean, you mentioned obviously it matches up with a 3K time. It also matches up with being an Olympic medalist, because we know how quick that track is.
Yep.
So it's not the days where indoors is ridiculously slower than outdoors or anything like that. This record is still 10 seconds off the outdoor world record, and you'd expect an Olympic medalist to be able to run within 10 seconds of the world record.
Yeah, you do. So yeah, there's Grant Fisher. God knows what he is going to do. You know, a lot of athletes have actually recently been talking about, obviously now they've got to go away and they've got to prepare for Grand Slam, because I think it's in under 50 days. So it's kind of a month and a half away. What is it? That first weekend of April. So Grand Slam kind of clashes with the world indoors as well. So some of these athletes, you know, they are going to have to sort of get to it. And we're going to see them early. And I think that's where bringing Josh Kerr, and that's where his kind of head's at. You know, he's sort of, you know, I think just foregone the indoor season. I don't think we're going to see him at the Europeans or the World Indoors. So he's going to have to get ready for Grand Slam. And on that, saw a very cool video again with him. You can tell I don't do much but watch YouTube. To be fair, I've procrastinated big time today as well. I've been watching back some National Cross videos. So I've not used my time wisely at all today. But yeah, he's got a video out, and it's really kind of behind the scenes, and it is the behind the scenes content that you want to see, the conversations with Danny Mackey. You know, it's the conversations that him and his team were having around dropping out of the Milrose Games, seeing where Kerr's head was at during that time. By the way, he had norovirus, and then, you know, seeing where his team's head was at and everything, and just kind of seeing how he was negotiating that 24 hours leading into Milrose was bloody good. Even when they were talking tactics and stuff, and, you know, they were being open as hell. It was fascinating, you know, talking about potentially what Nagus might do, what Kessler might do, how, where he should make his move, etc. So anyone who's wants kind of a deeper insight into, you know, those conversations Elite has with his coach in the final kind of day or two before a big race, it's a great watch.
Yeah, we expect to see similar things, like you mentioned him and Grand Slam. We'll expect to see similar things around Grand Slam, right? Because that's the whole kind of point of this event, is creating matchups, selling stories, and expect to see more of Josh Kerr this season, and also more of the rest of the athletes in there, because that is the whole point. And if they do manage to capture that, then I think it'll be brilliant.
Yeah, I think they will. So, mate, that's a summary of some of the big results. See, yeah, Keeley Classic went down on the weekend as well. So I guess I like the idea, I like the legacy, but for me, it was a carbon copy of what we've already got, or what we've already seen before. Yes, the branding was there, but how was it different to what we've seen with a Birmingham World Tour, or in fact, just any race on British soil, like a British Championships? How was it different to that? Like, it was just very similar. Like, you know, a few things, obviously, you know, they had a DJ on the infield, etc. Obviously, the branding was on point, and even, you know, the fact that Keeley didn't race, probably the crowd got a lot more access to her, which was cool for them and kind of everyone in the stadium, which I think was, you know, a good idea. But again, you know, it's stuff that we've seen before. Like, you know, I remember going to Crystal Palace back in the day growing up, and, you know, David Radicia was coming out in an open top convertible, you know, and he was getting introduced to the crowd and doing autographs just before the meet even started. That was cool. That was mega. You know, so these sorts of things do happen. So I just think there was no innovation at that meet for me. I don't know if that's harsh to say, but I think if there was, I didn't see it.
No, I don't think it's harsh, but it's more. Did you expect more?
Yeah, I did. You know, I think it's always difficult as well, because when you set a meet up for a world record attempt, I guess you're only going to walk away like, I guess, content when you've seen the world once.
Yeah, or at least seen a race,
or at least see someone come close. So I guess that was a big loss, and I don't know how it affected ticket sales. I would love to find out.
Right.
You know, potentially how many tickets did they sell versus how many people went through the door. But yeah, I mean, it was a long meet. You know, it started, you know, there were races getting underway at sort of pre-midday. And obviously it went till sort of, you know, half four. And yeah, look, we did see British records, saw the men's 1000 British record go. We saw, you know, Justin Davies ran a great 800 and got the European qualifying time. Lena Nelson broke a British record in the 300. Georgia Bell came very, very close to breaking Laura Muir's record, and again had a good race with Sarah Healy. So there were some good races, but it was kind of no different to what we've seen before.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, mate. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they maybe they did. I don't know if they promised us anything new, except they were just saying, "Oh, this is a meet named after Keely, and Keely's gonna
race and
hit the record," and that's. For me, anyway, that's all I expected to see.
Fair enough. Yeah, maybe you had different expectations. Yeah, I think, you know, but again, I look at meets like that and I'm just like, you know, there were a lot of kids who wanted to meet Keely, and I'm just thinking, look, there was a lot of time between events, and you know, that's a pet peeve of mine when I've got to wait 20, like I am an impatient guy, when I've got to wait 20 minutes, 30 minutes between a race. It's just like, what, you know, what are we here for? Where's, you know. And, you know, I think there, you know, Keely did a great job as, you know, linking up with so many kids in the stands, but I don't know if this is doable logistically, but I'm just thinking, well, why not just have, you know, a 30-minute window and just say, hey, all the kids just come to the infield, let's meet Keely, you know, just get her to do some autographs, or maybe more of a meet and greet pre or post the meet or whatever, you know, instead of sort of just going around and trying to, you know, getting programs passed down to her and stuff. So there was that, I think, you know, and again, like just, I don't know. Is it just like a UK officials thing? But I think UK officials would have an absolute meltdown if we had a crowd on the infield. But yet in America, they do it at every meet. And like when I've been to a bloody Watford Open, Watford Open's a bad example. But if I've been to an open meet, I get absolutely yelled at if I'm like in any sort of lane on the track cheering people on, because that's an unfair advantage apparently. But yet Grant Fisher's got X amount of people on the infield screaming his name as well as everyone on the outside. So I'm just like, I don't know what the rules are in the UK, but again, you know, could they have done that? Could they have got people a little bit closer to the action?
Just cultural thing, isn't it? We're just not used to seeing it in the UK, like you say, and it's not something that regularly happens. Don't get me wrong, doesn't mean we shouldn't be trying to change that, because we absolutely should. Like the amount of meets in the US where they allow people into lanes is staggering, and it clearly works, and we've obviously seen it with Highgate, but we don't
Highgate
see it.
Highgate have nailed it. That's the only place.
We don't see it anywhere else. And I think you're right. I do think there's a bit of a resistance from,
I don't know,
maybe not individual else. Officials, but maybe like whoever governs that, or just like certain tracks as well. Because I guarantee if you went outdoors into a more low key track, you could definitely do that. There's normally like with these indoor arenas and particularly like more high profile tracks, is then obviously big organizations that are putting on like loopholes, I suppose, that like make it harder to do some of these things. Or you think Highgate is essentially a freaking park?
Yeah, but I just think at Highgate, the organizer
committee. Oh, I agree.
They have their heads switched on, and you know they just get it done. They don't find excuses. They go, how can we make something which is just going to be so engaging, so interactive for the crowd, but as well as delivering a first class experience for the athletes? And you know they just get it done. So I understand there's you know, rules and regulations around this sort of thing. So I swear I have been told before at a meet that, like, you know, your time or record can be disqualified or nullified if like there's people on the infield cheering you on and stuff like that.
That's fun.
I've been threatened with that. Like if you're cheering on the track, it's like, oh.
I got told that I was pacing at BMC and I was cheering from the inside, and I got told you're not allowed to cheer from the inside. So I've like,
yeah,
stepped off the track and then cheered people on.
How many years? How many years ago was that, mate?
Yeah.
PB Classic in 2010. We haven't seen Love on the track in a while. I might put him to the test. Get him to do a flat out mile, see what he can run.
I might just be like a shit version of Nick Simmons. You know, he does all his challenges after he stopped running.
What, go run a world record in that?
Yeah, he does like from Olympian to that. I'll do from 15 minute 5K to couch to 5K.
What are those shoes? Those sandal thing? Crocs. Yeah, go do a record in Crocs.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, that was a Achilles Classic. Women's 800 was good as well. Boffy ran well there. Got inside that Euro standard. So I think, you know, she's now put herself into the kind of one of the few driving seats around that British Champs. So we did quite a hefty British Champs preview, didn't we? But, you know, not too much has changed. I mean, we mentioned that Davies was right on the cusp of getting that time. He's banged that as well. Boffy's banged her time. And then I think we did speak quite a lot about Jake Wyman, but there are rumours at the Keighley Classic that he's injured, so we won't be seeing him at the British Champs. And then I guess, you know, Westy and Rory Leonard raced out in Boston as well, and kind of for Boston, they ran steady, you could maybe say.
Yeah, maybe. But this is the... I've forgotten who it was now, but we definitely spoke to someone not that long ago about Boston, and they were sort of saying... Yeah, not everyone does run well there, and it just not pays attention to the people who don't. And that actually can just, like, it's quite easy still to have a bad day at Boston or below average day at Boston. It's just that at the top end, we see it being so sharp that we assume.
You make a good point there, yeah. You ignore the bad results of Boston. But yeah, Westy was like just inside 13:20 and Leonard just outside 13:22. So. You know, both of those strong runs, but yeah, so, sometimes when someone says they're going to Boston, you're like, oh God, are we going to see a, you know, 13:05 come here? But I tell you, he did run well. George Cootey, 7:40 for 3,000. And mate, I was looking at Jonathan Galt published the NCAA leading 16 marks. And for the men, 7:41 is the 16th fastest man in the NCAA. Jesus Christ. Need to compare that to the Europeans. I think obviously that European standard being 7:43. Pretty sure we got 16 Europeans inside that mark. Haven't checked, but it is kind of like a like for like almost. Obviously, they haven't quite got the top end that Europeans has, but depth wise, because you just know there's another 15 who are like 7:42 men on the cusp. So quite scary. And I think the women
also know if you chucked them in the race, they wouldn't feed.
No, they wouldn't feature. No, they obviously, they're going to Boston every weekend, but and on the women's side as well, I think 8:50 for the 3,000 and very similar marks. The men's was like 3:54 for the mile to qualify for NCAAs. It's just insane. He won for the 5K to qualify. It's like, what? And I think the women had to break 15 minutes. Or it was like 15:10 maybe for the, again, ridiculous NCAA marks. So, yeah. And then again, Giles was another man who ran well on the World Tour circuit in Poland. 3:35 for the win over 1500, much better than the mile he ran. He did try and go with Jakob, to be fair, in Levan. Yeah. Started a little bit more modestly and got a good result out of that. So again, he looks like he's going to be committed to the 1500 trials now. So if he is in it, you probably tend to, yeah, would you bet on him against Gawley?
Yeah, we said when we did the indoor preview, I just think Gawley is 1500 indoors and he's supreme. He's a great tactician over that distance. And I just think, I wouldn't bet against Gawley.
Yeah, Gawley looked like he needed that K as well. Spoke to him a little bit after, and he is someone who he's been known to sort of do those nice hard hitting 800 time trials before he goes into sort of a championship 1500 scenario, and so I think that K was crucial for him, especially getting back over to British soil, getting a race out, and just hard, relentless. And it's going to hopefully make things feel a lot smoother for him come that 1500. So I think that's primed him well. He definitely needed that race on the weekend, but him and Giles look to be both then can't count out Fogg, but his record against them two just isn't as good. So I guess it's time for him to really step up. We know he's fast. We know he's exceptionally good, but can he go and win against some big hitters?
It would be a big shock, wouldn't it? Which would be great for him. I think it's fair to say it would be a big shock if those two aren't one two.
I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that.
Yes, and then also looking ahead to National Cross this weekend, back at Parley Hill, so plenty for people to look forward to as well, mate. I know you're pretty excited, aren't you?
Of course I am, mate. World's best cross race in the world's best venue. I couldn't be more excited. We haven't given it a heaps amount of coverage. I just feel like so much going on at the moment. And of course, we're clashing at British Champs, but I will definitely be at Parliament Hill. I mean, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else on Saturday, to be honest with you. So, yeah, looking forward to it. And I think what's exciting about the National is you just don't know who is going to win. You know, on the men's side, yes, we got Mohamed, we got Emil. They're both entered. Are they both likely to run? I'm not sure. I've heard a lot of rumors that they might not run, which is a shame because we're going to be denied a clash of the ages. 2019, I think they finished a second apart at Leeds. That was a hot, sunny day. And then 2022, obviously 3 years ago, Mohamed runs away with it, but Emil comes with like a ridiculous late charge. Had a bit of problem getting out the gates up the first hill and then worked through. So did Alex Yee, you know, and those top three, what they've gone on to do in this sport since, you know, you could argue that the National is a bit of a platform for success as well. So, but I think this year, especially, like, it's very, very hard to call. I think we're going to get a lot of new faces in that sort of top five, top 10 on both the men's and the women's side, to be honest with you.
Yeah, for sure, mate. And I think it is a shame we're not going to see those guys, but who can blame them? Obviously, London Marathon coming up.
I doubt it, yeah.
I don't think so either, mate, to be honest. Like, London Marathon coming up, like, I just don't think it's part of a... That's not part of a 205 attempt for me. And it's not... These guys aren't messing around with the marathon anymore. Not they're messing around before, but do you know what I mean? The quicker you get, the more rides on that kind of preparation. It will be, what, 9 weeks out from London, right? But there will be some good athletes there, like on the men's side, like, as you mentioned, like James Kingston's going to be there, Angus McMillan's going to be there. You're going to have some good team races as well. And like you say, there's probably athletes that we won't even mention now or that aren't on people's radars that we've scrolled through the entry list with the clubs and won't have found, and then they'll be the one that does well as well, so...
100%. And I think you talk about that team title, and I think that's something which I think should be celebrated a lot more, you know, just in the sport itself, not just kind of on the day. And that's going to be relatively wide open. I mean, some of the heavy hitters on the men's side, potentially Bristol and West. Obviously, you've got Tonbridge again. You've always got Leeds, but you've got Cambridge and Coleridge as well. But Highgate, you know, can they do a job? Home course, you know, they've got probably the most entries, maybe between them and Tonbridge, who's got the most men entered. You know, I have seen Jacob Allen and LePetra on their list, whether those two run. You talk about London, I think there's a lot of sub-elite men who are sort of prioritising their London marathons as well. You know, can they break 2:15? Can they break 2:40? That sort of ballpark. And we definitely always used to see them run the National, but, you know, a lot more people are getting a bit softer in this day and age, I would say. Maybe that's unfair. But top returner.
Yeah, mate. Will James West double up? Is he on the Tonbridge entries?
I think Mark Cookway would love him to be. James West is not on the Tonbridge entries. But it's the perfect weekend because we've got Nationals on the Saturday. That's the heat of British champs. And then on the Sunday, you know, we got all the finals, so we can sit down and chill out on a Sunday afternoon. So it really is, you know, a perfect weekend if, what is it they say? What's that beer they say? I've balls it up already. Is it Heineken? Like Heineken Saturday or something? I don't know.
I don't know what you are about.
I don't drink beers, mate. So
alcohol-free brew dogs. That's what to send, Matt, if you want to send him a gift.
But I think it's worth noting, you know, a few top returners. Top returner on the men's side, Jack Miller. He was fifth, in 2022. So, you know, I wouldn't put the favourite hat on him. But he's definitely a strong candidate to see how he rolls. And Callum Johnson, as well, see how he goes. I mean, my boy Richard Slade is moving well as well, so I'm super excited to see what he can do. So I do think the men's race is wide open. We got the D brothers for Shaftesbury. They're another team you could factor in. And with the 6 to score on the men's side, it does make it interesting. You really it's happened before. You've got to go down really sometimes into the sort of 90s and possibly even the 100s where that sixth man is. So, and then on the women's side, you know, I mean, Thames Heron Hounds did a job at the Southerns, but can Herne Hill, you know, I think on the women's side with 4 to score, Herne Hill could be in with a great shout. You know, to be honest with you, they've got Poppy Craig McFeely in there, but then also Lucy Jones has been running very, very well as well for Herne Hill, and she's had a great cross season so far. But Amelia Quirk for Bracknell AC, come back to it. She seems to be getting in some pretty good shape, winning the British Cross Challenge a couple of weeks ago now, and maybe all things just been building towards a national cross.
Oh yeah, we'd love that, wouldn't we? Obviously, the blue and yellow winning the national would be quite something. I don't think any chance on the team side, but Amelia Quirk for sure, in with a shout in that senior women's race,
without a doubt. And there's plenty more. Like, there's quite a few crossovers from kind of Bucks as well, like Neve Britton Hubbard. Like, how will she go and perform too? And both the junior races, you know, junior men's and junior women's are incredibly high standard. So, I mean, there's so many entries and you just never know who's going to run. So there's no point sort of putting a lot of, you know, impotence on some of those, you know, heavy favorites, because it's just likely that they might not be there or they might be there. So we'll just let the day unfold, man. I think that's why it's so special. Iconic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that's just a recommendation to you guys. Make sure you get down there if you can, if you're local. If not, look out for results. Is there a stream this year?
Or yeah, definitely. Yeah, some stream. YouTube.
Yeah. So on YouTube, there you go. So enjoy that and then enjoy the British Champs as well. And of course, we will bring you a guest episode on Sunday. So we've just recorded that one. So that'll be good
for you guys to enjoy as well.
Of course.
Really, really good episode just recorded.
Yeah, and then we'll be back with another weekend roundup next week, chatting about the national, chatting about the British Indoor Champs. We'll have an idea of who's going to European, so that will be, again, bumper episode. This one's been massive again. Got to work out at the moment, mate, but it's good. Hope you guys are enjoying the weekend roundups, because we definitely are. So we'll catch you very soon, guys, and thanks for listening.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.